You are listening to W. Dean Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
The following lecture by Imam Muhammad is entitled Human Intellect, Part 1, recorded September 27, 1992, in Fallinger Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
As-salamu alaykum. May this peace be on you. Our praise to the one God, the Lord, creator, sustainer of all the worlds. And we witness that he is but one alone, that he depends on none for the run of the heavens and the earth. He sustains all things by himself, needing nothing from anything that he has created. And we witness that Muhammad, to whom the Quran was revealed about 1400 and a few years ago, is the last prophet and Allah's messenger and servant. And we salute him with the traditional salute, the most excellent salute, Ameen. We trust God to bless us with good results from our efforts. We obey his religion that he revealed to us by way of the prophets and completed and perfected with the last prophet. We seek to have innocent and pure intentions, and we trust that Allah will give us the good results. Before beginning to address the topic, I would like to express something that is on my heart right now, and that is to say we congratulate again the Muslim chaplains and the Imam of Champaign, here in Champaign, Illinois, Imam Muhammad Abdullah, and all those who worked with them to make the occasion last night what it was, and that was a very impressive occasion. We'd like to also acknowledge that there was a speech given, or lecture given by two persons, and the lectures were filled with information, useful information, especially for me, for us in the ministry, and was very sincere, and that's what impressed me most of all, that the speakers were very sincere and very well qualified and prepared. And they complimented each other. The first speaker, the director, Peters, he addressed the problem of crime and our youth falling victim to crime and the burden on the taxpayers and how that burden could be lifted and money could be better used. And then he was complimented by the second speaker, Miss Harris, Zelina Harris, who dealt with the conditions before even the crimes are noticed or even the crimes are committed, the home condition, the neighborhood, the community condition. And I understood her to be placing responsibility, or at least trying to get us to see that responsibility is on us and our homes, parents and families, and on the neighborhood to create an environment, to work to create an environment that will be conducive to good productive behavior instead of self-destructive behavior. So I really appreciated the evening last night, and I just had to make those comments before beginning this address. So it's very difficult to ever see the whole picture of a public figure. Very difficult. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who made the name Muslim known in the African American community, in the black community, and made the name Allah and the name Muhammad and the Quran, the one who made all of that terminology known to us, is Elijah Muhammad. And I know many of us think we know him. I think we knew him. We knew him as a public figure, but few of us knew him as a father. Few of us knew him as a husband, like my mother did. Few of us knew him on the basis of just friendship, like some of these brothers sitting before me here did. I'm looking at some of them right now. They knew him as not only as a leader, but they knew him as a friend. They knew him as a brother. In the ranks with other brothers, they knew him as a friend. When it comes to me, the same thing goes out to any other figure, public figure. We only see what is presented. And most times we are not able to really know the person in an intimate way or in a close-up, get a close-up look at that person, to see the human side, to see the private life, the human side of that person. And it's very important to know the human side of a figure that you seek respect or seek guidance from. If you respect the figure, a public figure, and you seek guidance or respect what that person says enough to let it influence your life, then you should try to see the human side of that person as well. And the human side is revealed, but it's not the point. The speaker will never make a point of revealing his human side. But if you are a person that's turned on, sensitive, you're sensitive to the human side of a person, you can listen to a public figure and still and also come to know him as the human side of him. You can come to know him in a way that most listeners would not know him. And a few did listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and they did come to know him in that way, because I know they told me. When I would be telling them certain things about what I know of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they would tell me, so they would say, Brother Imam, or Brother Minister, I used to be called Brother Minister, say, look, say, you know, I saw that in your father. Said, I knew that too. And they started telling me things that they registered. And we would begin to feel real comfortable with each other, because we were identifying with each other, that we saw something in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that we thought was very important. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, all white people are devils. But he didn't discover that. Someone told him that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, a white person is born devil. They can't be born any other way except as a devil. You know, all the babies are born devils. Well, if he didn't discover that, somebody told him that. Yeah. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, a black man is God, the owner, the maker, the cream of the planet Earth, the father of civilization, the God of the universe, and he knows every square inch of it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't discover that. Somebody told him that. And it wasn't a black man. It wasn't nobody from America. It was somebody from overseas that said he was bringing the religion, bringing Islam. Okay? And when we look in the Quran, we don't find any of that. That's not in the Quran. Say, hey, where is that? Where is that? We can't find it in the Quran. But he said he was bringing us Islam. You know? And we look in the history of Islam, we don't find any of that. But he said he was bringing us Islam. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us many things. And he told us, he said, I am the messenger of God. I'm Allah's messenger. That's what he said. But he didn't leave us to wonder whether he's talking about God, you know, invisible God, or God of Judaism or something like that, or God of the Quran or anything like that. He made it clear that the God, he said, that came to me, came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. He said that came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. So he identified the same man that taught him those things, he identified that man as his God. And then he said he was chosen to be the messenger of that God. Now, he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his God. How come he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his God? Because he told us that his God would live about 500 years. Well, I would like to see my children live 5,000 years or more. I would like to see my children outlive, the generation of my family outlive that God. So he didn't leave us totally dependent on his God, you see? He said his God was going to die one day. Now, he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his teachings either. He said, someone will come after me and bring in the religion. So I'm not teaching you religion so much as I'm cleaning you up. He said, I'm cleaning you up, getting you ready. He said, someone will come after me and bring the religion. He said, that one that comes may use part of what we have, or may not use anything of what we have. Now, should it shock those who believed in him, if they really accept what he said, should it shock them that now we come with something that is totally different? We put aside most of what he gave us. We put aside all the Yaakov's history. We put aside all those things, you know, and we pick up the Quran and we put emphasis on the religion. Brother, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad saw this happening exactly as it has happened or not. We certainly must agree that the man must have been in some way psychic. He must have been in some way psychic to predict an outcome that resembles very much what has happened. He said someone will come and give you the religion, teach you the religion, and he said they may not use anything of what we have. Well, if anybody is really good in his heart and really means well, he'll never throw away that is good. He'll only throw away that is incorrect or bad, and he'll keep that's correct and good. So we find that we keep and cherish and thank Allah for the honor of Elijah Muhammad and thank him for his good works, and we keep and cherish much of his good works and much of his good teachings, because much of his good teachings is applicable right now to our conditions. But we can't raise what he told us, though it be good and sound and acceptable. We cannot raise what he gave us above the book that he raised above everything, and that is the Quran. He didn't teach us the Quran, but he did lift the Quran above everything, even the lessons, even Yaakov's history, everything. So I thought I would say that to you before going into my topic. Now, I want to tell you something else. I realize that I'm on the campus of the University of Illinois here in Champaign, Urbana, and I realize that perhaps we have a few members of the student body here, perhaps even some of the faculty might be here. I realize that. But I also am aware that I'm looking at people that I became who I am among. I became who I am among you. You know, I'm looking at people who knew me when I was a teenager. That's right. I'm looking at people who knew me when I was a teenager. And that can't help, I can't help but have my mind and heart influenced by their presence. Yes. So my talk is going to be flavored a little differently because of their presence. You'll find, if you really listen closely to me, you who have known my father, Henri Lightman, if you listen closely to me, you'll find that we are very similar. We are very similar. The older I get, the more I realize how much I'm like my father, the late leader Elijah Muhammad. Yes, I do. I listen to myself sometimes, I say, that sounds like Daddy. Well, that's natural. It's natural that a son should be like his father, you know? That's natural. I find that even my appetite for certain things, the older I get, the more my appetite get like his. And I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud of it. I like it. I love that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if I would describe him without bringing in myth, you may call what I call myth, some of you who haven't studied myth like I've studied myth from the following of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you may call divine science, wisdom, supreme wisdom, or whatever. But I call it myth, myth. And I find that when I'm talking, I tend to be somewhat influenced by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's ability, his skills to juggle dynamite and oatmeal, you know, or I should say nitroglycerin and no oatmeal, you know, and he keeps his mind on oatmeal and he keeps his mind on nitroglycerin, and when he leave there was no explosion. Nobody got killed. Everything was safe. Everything worked out fine. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad also, I see him as a man. And by that, when I gave you that little illustration there, really what I want to say is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, though he had no high school education, no formal education, he never attended high school. And he only went to the third grade of elementary school in the poor South. So we can say he had no formal education. He was a man who learned by reading and listening to others, coming in contact with knowledge. That's how he learned. And most of what he learned was from the man that he said came as a stranger, and he was a strange man, the man that gave him his idea for the Nation of Islam, W.D. Farrar, W. Farrar Muhammad. Yeah, so most of his education, his knowledge came as a result of that. Although he was a person who was reading and studying and questioning everything in the early years of his life. We know that from his mouth and from the mouth of my mother and from the mouth of his mother, my grandmother. We know that he studied and questioned religion, the church, and Christianity as a young man. And he came from the South, like most of our people did, to the North, to Detroit. He came to Detroit with his family and began working in Detroit. And continued to study and question. He was influenced somewhat by Marcus Garvey, who had his African-American movement before the Nation of Islam ever got to be popular. And Drew Ali, Noble Drew Ali, who himself introduced a kind of Islam. It was also made up religion by a person or persons, but it was introduced as Islam. And I think these inventors of these artificial brands of Islam really feared that if they introduced true Islam to America in the black community, in the African American community, that they would be killed or deported. If they were not citizens of this country, they would be deported or either killed, you see. So I think that they were more interested in influencing African Americans or blacks away from allegiance to the white man and to the white world, and to, more importantly, to white man's ideas, and to wean African American people off of white man's ideas in hopes that the African American would one day begin to think with self-confidence, think himself on his own with self-confidence, and become an independent thinker for himself and for his own people. I believe that was their intent, and if that was their intent, then God will reward them based upon their good intent. He will reward them, even though they made terrible errors in presenting Islam incorrectly. If that was their intent, we are told in Islam, matters are judged by intent. Matters are judged by intent. If you believe you're doing it right, and you believe it sincerely in your heart, and God will not punish you even though you were doing something wrong, because you were not consciously erring. You were not consciously erring. You were doing what you thought would be good. So God will reward them. if that is true, then I expect all of Elijah Muhammad will be rewarded with paradise, because he did much more good than a lot of people who call themselves holy and straight. So I believe he'll be rewarded with paradise. And if Farrar was sincere in what he did, I'd say the same thing of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teacher. I do believe God will reward him with paradise if he was having good intentions and feeling that his work would be good. And his intention was good. Most of all, his intent has to be good. If you're doing it for money or for power, no, the intent is wrong. You can't do it for money. You can't do it for power. You got to do it to please God. You got to do it for what's right. You see? Not for the material benefits and not for worldly statue or worldly fame. No. That won't work. If we do it for that, we're sinners and we get the punishment. We go to hell for corrupting religion. So we who love Baha'u'llah Elijah Muhammad, we should pray for his soul. We should remember him and pray for his soul. And we should pray for each other. I know some of you do, and I know I do. Yes. So another thing about Baha'u'llah Elijah Muhammad that stands out in me is that he believed in what he believed in, and nothing could break him from that belief. Nothing could break him from that belief. And he didn't fear any consequences when it came to standing up for what he believed God wanted him to do. Nothing could shake him or break him. If Farad said don't eat peanuts, they take 5 years off your life. He might slip and eat some peanuts, you know. He said, well, I took the, he said, these are not the red-skinned ones. He said the red-skinned ones are the bad, real bad ones. Yeah. So he might slip and eat some peanuts, you know. But that's not breaking allegiance to the teacher. It's important matters that really count. As long as you uphold the important matters, then you are upholding that leader. You're upholding that person. He upheld the important matters. He never backed off of those important matters until he was almost facing death and saw a change in America that was so convincing, he just had to acknowledge these changes. He saw America change from one of two laws, one for white people and one for black people, to one of one law. He lived to see that. Now, whether some of us right now, you might, you know, we have people that blow up things, and they say right now we're in prison camps. You know, I hear some blacks talking. They say we're in prison camps, and I don't see nobody with the key to the prison but them. But they say they're in prison camps. They say they're locked up. You know, Honorable Elijah Muhammad realized that circumstances had changed so great, so drastically in this country that he had to change his tune somewhat. So he began to soften his tune. He began to even appeal to us. And I never heard him speak like this before when he was speaking to our community. He said, I tell you this, he said, and I mean it from my heart. He said, if the white people can accept you, then you accept them. That's what he told us at one of his national conventions. Maybe not his exact words, but that's very close to his exact words. If white people can accept us and treat us fairly, be nice by us, then the burden of decency should be on us to at least return the same to them. A wise man like that, he would look stupid getting up there telling you Yaqub's history was wrong and this was wrong and that was wrong. He just let you know by the way, by his attitude. I have changed my attitude. It's time for you to change yours. Yeah. So the wisdom of Baha'u'llah Elijah Muhammad, he stands out for his wisdom, for his psychology. He had ability. He had a natural ability, to rule us, be our leader, and rule us with his own special psychology. He had his own special psychology, and sometimes we differed as to that psychology. Baha'u'llah Elijah Muhammad said to me once, say, son, he said, I know you're going to be the person that you are to be. He said, but you can never get our people doing something, talking soft to them. He said, son, you got to ride, what they call a cowherd or something like that, he said. He said, and you have to have the whip. He said, and you got to pop it every now and then. Yeah, he was right. But I'm not cut out for it, but he was right. Yep. You get the best result from our people when you don't listen to them. When you talk to them and don't listen to them. When you give them orders and don't accept any excuses. When you be the only superior and they're all inferiors, you get the best result from our people. Now, I hope that day will change, but it hasn't changed yet. It ain't quite as bad as it used to be, though. It's changing. But that's the description of us. Not only that, we like to be led by false people. Yeah, we do. We like to be led by false people. The bigger, more phony he is, and the more we like him. And the more we give him. We go and listen to him and just enjoy him. Get up and give him $100. We ain't got number $2 left. Give him $100 into the offering. Big phony. We'll buy him the latest car and the most expensive car. Dress him up so he looks like the private pimp of the United States. Looks like he's pimping everybody that's available to support a pimp. You know, he's got the wardrobe out of sight, wardrobes and rings and everything. He's loaded with sparks. He's sparkling all over. He's dressed and he jumps out in the car. Looks like Buck Rogers designed it. And we just love him to death. Praise God for his life and safety and happiness. Yeah. Many of us still like that. Yeah, many of us are still like that. But we ain't satisfied with that. We're going to change. That's right. We are changing, and we're going to change more. Another thing that I admire about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as extraordinary attributes of his. His wisdom was an extraordinary attribute. His psychology that he used was an extraordinary attribute. His devotion and obedience was an extraordinary attribute. And one other thing I'm going to mention before going into my topic. His boldness. Boldness. He was a bold man. He was bold enough to challenge the people that didn't want to do nothing but come in and sleep. Sit down in the chair and go to sleep. He would challenge you to take over the supermarket and run it. Wake up and get up in there and accept the responsibility to run this supermarket. And you sitting there sleeping while he's talking about business. You ain't interested in nothing. You're sitting there nodding. Wake up! Man of bold faith. Bold faith. Bold courage and bold faith. Very bold. And he would try to excite us to be bold and courageous. He say, you know what my Savior say about the whole race of these devils? That he could put all of them on a string and tie it around his baby finger and shake them like that. Well, you see, a man talking to you like that, you know, if you've been excited to, intimidated to see the white man as a big towering figure, he starts to get smaller while that man is talking to you, if you have the courage to sit there and hear him out.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements. Thank you for your continued support for Imam W.D. Muhammad's ministry. Your contributions are sincerely appreciated. Send your donations to the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. Thank you. And now we return to Imam W.D. Muhammad. Please turn the tape over to side two for more of Imam W.D. Muhammad.
Well, you see, a man talking to you like that, you know, if you've been excited to, intimidated to see the white man as a big towering figure, he starts to get smaller while that man is talking to you, if you have the courage to sit there and hear him out. I witnessed that some of them didn't have the courage. They start sneaking out when he start talking. They get up real easy out of their seats. But I'm looking at some of those right here. who sat through it all. They sat through it all. They were brave enough to hear him out. And thank Allah, now we are rewarded more than we ever were before. So we must appreciate Dalai Lama Muhammad for that boldness, for that courage, to look at a people that seemingly had no aggressiveness at all, no ability to face the challenge of white world dominance and superiority by white world society, complete total ownership by white people and everything, a people without enlightenment, a people without the tools of education, a people without the means, the worldly means, to encourage them to stand up to the white man and begin to accept responsibility for their own life and their own future, to begin working for the future of a nation of blacks on this earth where that would be independent and responsible for itself. That was, I'm telling you, really a phenomenal thing. Really a phenomenal thing. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad leading that courageous effort has to be seen as a man having an attribute of extraordinary boldness and courage. Boldness and courage of faith and also action. Faith and action. Now, I still somewhat believe that that psychology can be justified, though it was stretched and used in the extreme. That makes it unacceptable now in light of what Allah has revealed in Quran and what is established by Muhammad, not a myth, but a living, a man alive in history, Muhammad the Prophet, the prayers and the peace be on him. So in light of that, we can't accept that anymore. But let me tell you something. I believe Islam should be applied as science is applied. I believe Islam is to be applied as knowledge is applied. Islam is most of all knowledge, ilm. Ilm is the Arabic term, or Quranic term. Islam is most of all knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. We know the condition for getting that knowledge is a sound heart, an innocent heart, a sincere heart, a true heart, a faithful heart. That's the condition for receiving that blessing from Allah. But the great instrument of progress is knowledge. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even when he was encouraging us to become equal with the white man, or to seek equality with the white man, he used knowledge as the criteria. He said, you will not become equal until you have equal knowledge. And those are the exact words of Elijah Muhammad. You will not become equal until you have equal knowledge. Well, if you are Muslim, how many Muslims we have? Raise your hand, Muslims. Thank you, that's a great majority of you are Muslim. Well, let me tell you, if you Muslims, you should feel that you now have opportunity to become equal with the white man. Because the Quran is definitely equal knowledge. It equals all knowledge. Ain't no knowledge that can rise above Quran. And it is superior knowledge. So you who are Muslims, if you believe that, then you should be feeling in a good situation now. You should feel yourself in a good situation to exist, progress, compete, and rise to top positions in America and any other country if you devote yourself to the purpose. Because the Quran is not average knowledge, it is the best of knowledge. All right? It is the best of knowledge. But I tend to also focus on the intellect, the human intellect. And I believe that this is the way of the Prophet, peace be upon him. The way of the Prophet was to address the human intellect. The heart, certainly the heart too, it's necessary to address the heart. But most importantly, it is to address the human intellect. A human being in our physical makeup or in our biological makeup, we differ from the animal, but we are more like the animal in our physical and biological makeup than we are like the animal in our spiritual and intellectual makeup, our mental makeup. The mental makeup and the spiritual makeup of the human being is what gives the great difference, makes the great, for the great difference between the human being and the animal. Some of us think the great difference between the human being and the animal is that we are better, we are more moral, we are nicer. A human being, human is to be sweet, nice. We think human means kindness, love. It means all that, but in that particular area, we are not superior to the animals. Just study animals, and you'll see they practice love as much as we practice love. They practice love of young, love of their babies, just as much as our wives and mothers practice that love. They exhibit a willingness to sacrifice their life for their young, for their children, just as much as our wives and our mothers exhibit a willingness to sacrifice their lives for their young. They will suffer and go lean and not eat to feed their children, just like the river. So don't think that our difference between from the animal is to be seen in our goodness. No, but I tend to at least appreciate them for saying that in our treatment of our families, in our treatment of our children, we are no better than the animals, and many animals are much better than us. So where is our great distinction? It is in our mind. It is in the intellect. That's where we are greatly different. And it is in our spirit. Because of limited free will, or limited free spirit, and we say limited, Muslims choose to say limited, because that freedom is not ours, it is a trust. God give it to us as a trust. And he has created the world and us in such way that if we try to get all the freedom we want without respect, we will end up being denied that freedom. That freedom will be denied us. We'll be cut off from that freedom. So we say a limited freedom. Man is given freedom, but a limited freedom. The freedom is the freedom of choice. The freedom of choice. Freedom to choose, good or bad. The freedom to choose, right or wrong. The freedom to choose morally as well as rationally. The freedom to choose. So man has the freedom of choice, and he is a free spirit. It said that man is a free spirit. So we accept that and we appreciate that, but we know that as human beings, we have been put on this earth for a purpose. We believe in God. That's what identify us with Christians and with Jews and with other people who see one as authority over them and all. One in charge over all, over their life, over their existence, over everything. That's where we identify with them. We believe in, and many other areas we identify, but that's first. That's first where we identify with the people of religion, the people of faith, that we believe in God. Now you see, I come here and you can't see me, no tie. I say, why? He has no tie on. Dress shirt and no tie. Well, I like to go like this sometimes. This is a 16 and a half. And when I put a tie on, it makes it feel like a 15 and a half. And 15 and a half chokes me. So I didn't want to take the time to take off this nice shirt. I put it on and it looked nice. And I didn't have it. I said, the tie doesn't feel comfortable. I said, I'm going out and wearing like that. I'm going out like this. Like this, you know, I say they may think it's symbolic, but it ain't symbolic today, it's comfortable. But believe me, I do wear a tie, and all Muslims wear ties, and they're black ties. Yes, all Muslims wear ties, black ties. Yes. What is that tie? Tie of faith. Tie of faith. We're like Christians in that we believe, we have faith. We are people of faith. We are like the people of religion. We are people of faith, you see. So our tie is the tie of faith in God. Faith in God. And faith in what he has revealed. And faith in his prophets, you see. So our tie is the tie of faith. First of all, is the tie of faith. Now, you know, with faith comes hope, doesn't it? Yeah. People who have faith, they have hope. No faith, no hope. You see? So with faith comes hope. So the first black is the black of blackness of faith. And the first whiteness is the whiteness of hope. Yeah. See, with hope, there's some light, right? See, faith is a willingness to go without seeing. They may call it that the blind faith, that total faith, to go without seeing. And then hope is a condition that says, I see something, you see. Hope indicates that you recognize something. Yeah, not just faith, you also recognize something. A baby comes here in the world having faith in his mother. It's natural for him. So he lives his first days with his eyes closed. Well, most of the time closed. He might open them occasionally, you know. Or she might open hers occasionally. But the eyes closed. Trusting his mother blindly. That's what I mean. The baby, new baby, trusts the mother blindly. And that's how we should come to God. Now, if we already have some knowledge, then we come with a little light. But if we have no knowledge, then we should accept to believe in God on faith. And faith is a condition that we are born with. Just as that baby is born to trust his mother, every human being is born to trust a superior power over it, a power responsible for its existence. And in time, if it receives the right kind of environment and is blessed by God, that child will acknowledge God as God is revealed in the scriptures. Will acknowledge God and become a believer proper. I believe that we as Muslims should focus more on the intellect, the human intellect. When God says he's going to create a man, he wasn't talking about a romantic figure in the mind of some romanticists of the romantic age in Western history or in Western culture or any other culture or history. When Allah says, highly glorified is he, I'm going to create a man, a human being, we are to understand as Muslims that he's saying he's going to create an intellect, an intelligent, responsible human person with attention first on the intellect. The womb of birth for the human creation is the motivation to excellence in our nature that we are born with. We're born with a motivation to excellence. This motivation to excellence is in everything, not just us. But every life has that motivation to excellence. Every life begins from simple form to less simple form. From more dependent form to less dependent form. From less attractive form to more attractive form. So we find that all life, not just our life, all life is born to grow and progress from lesser to greater, from inferior to better, from dependency to less dependency, from poor performance to better performance. So this is the trend that's set in all life. The human being, because of our freedom to choose, our special intellect that we have, special mind that we have, we benefit the most. We benefit the most. But as Allah says, we are also subject to suffer the most are to be degraded the most because of the same freedom, the same independence that we have, the freedom of limited freedom of choice. Because if we are taken from this direction in our life, we can become regressive, and we can use our brain, the same intelligence, the same freedom of thought and freedom of mind, freedom of spirit, and everything that we have that is intended to better us, to better our condition, and to guide us and to bring us in better situations. We'll do the reverse. If we break with that tendency or with that natural line in our nature, natural line for excellence in our nature, we can look at history very briefly or very quickly, and we can see that history testifies to that. Arabia, for example. Arabia was in the Dark Ages. The time when the Prophet was born is called Jahiliyyah. Jahiliyyah, ignorant, and it means ignorant age. Or the West, in American language, we would say Dark Ages. The society had regressed because it had gotten off that natural line of motivation to excellence. It had gotten off of that, and it had begun to take pride in silly things, petty things, instead of pride in its best tool, best muscles, and best senses. See? When we put down our best tools, our best muscles, and our best senses, then we become retrogressive. We regress, become regressive instead of progressive. And many times, a society is not aware that it is regressive. It thinks of itself as progressive, when it's really regressive, because its values have changed. If we change the values to take pride in dehumanizing values rather than humanizing values, then we will be praising ourselves and saluting our achievements that are taking us back down the ladder when it comes to grades and human excellence, you see. We're thinking that we are really doing a great job, thinking that we are really well off, thinking that we are really the most advanced people on earth. Let me tell you something about American society. In truth, American popular culture is the most savage culture I'm aware of. Now, there might be one worse, I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware of any culture more savage, more humanly degrading than the popular culture of the United States of America. Now, there might be another, but I don't know about it. It would be much safer for me and my children to live in any jungles on this planet than to live in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, places like that. Much safer. Oh, I feel much more comfortable raising my children and leading them in prayers and teaching them Quran and Sunnah and guiding them to the way of Islam best I could if I was in some of these primitive jungles of South America, Africa, India, any place. I'd feel much safer with my family. This is the wildest place on earth. But we would like to cheer and praise ourselves for being better than everybody else. You're worse than everybody else. When it comes to popular culture of America, we're worse than everybody else. That's why it's so necessary in America to cherish freedom. To cherish freedom. Your freedom in America is your heaviest responsibility. There's no responsibility American carries heavier than their freedom, heavier than his or her freedom. And I hope you're registering what I'm saying, because it is very important if you don't already feel that way. That's very important. Your freedom is the heaviest burden you carry if you are live, conscious human being in the United States of America. But if you're not live, you're not conscious, you don't have any burden. Only when somebody deny you your wildness. aim for excellence, a principle for empowering the intellect. Dear people, believers, whether academic or streetwise, religious or secular, political or anti-government, flamboyant or modest, we all aim for recognition. Allah Most High says in the Quran, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ التَّقْوِيمِ. لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ التَّقْوِيمِ. God says that we have certainly formed or created the human in the best of mold. In the best of mold. Now you who have worked in some of these factories that I have, you know what a mold is. They make a mold, and the mold allows them to make many copies. One mold, many likenesses. So we are told in the Quran that we were created from one human person, one person, one nafs, one person, one soul. From that model, from that mold, many likenesses. Allah, to me, approves of my self-worth. I have a need to have a comfortable self-worth, to feel good about myself as a creature of value, a creature of some worth. And Allah approves of me wanting that when He says to me, and Allah is saying to each one of us with the revelation, that He created us in the best mold or image. Created us in the best image, the best mold or image. The ahsani taqleen. The very word that says best, that is translated in English best, that word is also used when you want to tell somebody that their work is excellent. Is excellent. It's the same word. It's for excellence too. So this word addresses the aim for excellence in our nature. In our nature. God is saying that He created every man and woman with the aim for excellence in their nature. The ahsani taqwim. With the aim for excellence in their nature. Now, dear people, I don't know what you hear about me. But like I said, it's hard to keep the whole picture of a public figure before you. But I am no less interested in serving the betterment, the improvement of African-American people in this country than I was when I was under the army Elijah Muhammad. If anything, I'm more interested now in working hard to improve the condition of African-American people in this country. Doesn't mean that that's my only interest, no. If I hear any other people, I'm interested in all people. My interest is in all people. But I don't know of any people that need more attention, even today in 1992, 1993 almost, than African-American people. Now, when that situation changed, then perhaps you'll hear me talking about this, the Indian. I'll be saying, yes, God is moving me to address the condition of the Indians, American Indians. Now, I know they don't have as much as we are. They're not recognized. They don't have the visibility and the acceptance in society that we do. That's right. But you go and talk to them, and you see that they have better condition than we have. I know. I talk to them. And some of them look down on us. They think our condition is worse than theirs. See, it's not all for the human, for the satisfaction of the soul. It's not all about how much you're recognized in Congress, how many seats you hold in Congress, how many Senate seats you have, you know, what chance you have for the presidency of the United States. Are you a legislator? Are you part of the government? You know, how many banks you have? It's not all about that. It's about how much respect you have among yourselves, from each other. How well knit your family is. How strong your family bonds are. How much pride you have in your own ability as a community. And they are so proud that they refuse to be taken over by Western culture. Their pride is keeping them out of visibility and out of places in or what you call high places. Yeah, it's that pride. I've talked to some of them. I lived with them for a while in prison for selective service violation. That was my offense. And I lived with some Indians up there in Minnesota. They had a number of them there, good number of them there. I lived with them, and I learned from them that they are proud people, and they have faith even now that divine powers are going to act on their behalf and rescue them from their situation in America. They still have that hope. How many of you still have the hope that divine powers are going to rescue you from your situations of dependency on dope traffic, wine, gambling, wasteful spending, and low self-esteem? How many of you still have the faith that God is going to rescue you from your condition? Not many. Not many. So the American Indian may be much better off than we are, on the whole. There's no way any other race would hear that the son of Elijah Muhammad is coming to this place here and not fill up this whole place and be standing all around the outside. No other race. No other race on this planet. Oh, I don't care how special he is, Eli. I ain't going to listen to him. Let's boycott him. I ain't listening to him. I don't want nobody to tell me. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to the black race. You know, make all kind of excuses. But if they heard Hitler was going to be here today, he was a traitor to the human race. They'd be all around there, standing all out there, wanting to see and hear Hitler. Strange people.
Go to tape 2 for more from Imam W. Dean Muhammad.